5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome. It's Friday, the final edition of Beyond the Darkness for the week. Are you a little sad, Tim? It seemed to go fast again this week, man.
Why did it ever? Yeah, I'm a little sad, yeah.
Well, I'm glad it's here and it's a long weekend. I'm heading off to Vegas, my friend.
I know you are.
It's Super Bowl weekend and Vegas is calling. And how do you celebrate when you go to Vegas with your dad and your adult son? You go and you go see what, Tim? What's my first stop in Vegas?
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, I'm going to go see Beatles Love at Cirque du Soleil. Shut up. I like music. I like shows, Tim. Shut up. Taking my son and dad. Isn't that cool? We're going to go listen to Beatles tunes while guys in tight spandex spin from the ceiling, Tim. Don't be jealous.
I'm just going to go see guys in tight spandex on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. You got wrestling.
I got IWI. Yeah,
yeah, very Saturday. Cool. All right. Yeah. Well, it's an exciting weekend for both of us either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how can people come see you at IWI if they're here in the Twin Cities area?
Moundstheater.org is where you get your discount tickets, your VIP tickets. 6:45 is when doors open. 7:30 is when bell time starts. We've got some huge matches on hand, including a world title match between the Prophet and Ryan Cruz, who is the former champion. Huge rematch coming up between those two. Again, get your tickets, moundstheater.org, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
All right. That's taking place tomorrow, Saturday, here in the Twin Cities at the Haunted and Historic Mounds Theater. Listen, what's going on for next week, Tim. This is just a little smattering, a taste, if you will.
Okay.
Monday, we're back with some Parashare and Supernatural news. Mm-hmm. Our second dose. We're just giving some people what they wanted.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do that every Monday. I'm just going to be honest with you. We're going to hit other topics as well. But we'll mix in Parashare and Supernatural news from time to time. But that's a lot easier to deliver this Monday while I'm still in Vegas. So yeah, that's what we're going to focus on.
Right.
Tuesday, we're going to take a look at the alien agenda. That's we're going to do that with the alien hunter himself, Daryl Sims. We'll talk about abductions and implants, Tim.
Wow.
Some really weird stories.
Yeah.
Also, ghost theory, deconstructing hauntings with Lloyd Auerbach next week. And we're going to go deep into the depths of Dark Waters next week, Tim. Our buddy Dark Waters is back, and he'll take up Friday next week. So you'll get the day off. You don't have to put together a theater of the mind because Dark Waters is bringing not one.
Okay.
Not two, Tim.
All right.
Three. No, not just three. Four. Can you believe
what?
Four Dark? Well, not even four. Five Dark Waters stories are going to be here, Tim.
Show off.
Sound effects, storytelling. People love Dark Waters when he appears on Darkness Radio. And when I had him on Coast to Coast AM, he's going to join us for the first time on Beyond the Darkness. For those of you not familiar, you're in for a great time. He's a researcher. He's an investigator. He's a big ass chicken just like me. So he's a great guy. We love hanging out with Dark Waters. And he'll be sharing some really creepy stories with us on next Friday. But tonight, Tim, we're going to look at some terror tales of the Ouija.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you know, back in the news, that Ouija Origins of Evil movie was awesome. Much better than the crap first movie.
Yeah.
I really liked the sequel. I thought it was great. But now it opened me up. I want to watch the Origins of Evil and then go back and watch the first Ouija movie.
Okay.
Because I think now that it's kind of this kind of full circle story, I might enjoy the second part, or the first part a little bit more. So I'm going to check that out. But I wanted to talk about Ouija board because it's still everybody's fascinated by this. And tonight we're going to spend time talking to experts about this, Tim. We've got a little later on the show, Dr. Michael Shermer from Skeptic Magazine, one of our favorite guests, because I love looking at that aspect of this too. And can he make sense of some of the situations, or what do you do when you run into a moment when you just can't explain it? We'll talk to Dr. Michael Shermer about that later on in the show. But right now, joining us, longtime friend of Darkness Radio and Ouija board historian, talking board historian, ladies and gentlemen, back where he belongs, beyond the darkness this time, Bob Murch is here with us this evening. Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm happy to be back. It's an honor.
I am excited because, on these Friday shows, we've been now incorporating the Theater of the Mind segments, where we go deep into the dark hives of emails and letters from our listeners going all the way back, I tells you, back to 2006, Bob. Can you believe we're able to go that far back in history and hear paranormal stories?
It's amazing.
It is. But Bob Murch has really delivered for us today with the help of our good friend Christine Letterman, a voiceover actress and radio show host in Colorado. She will be delivering today's Theater of the Mind. And this is pretty exciting. Bob delivered us an actual letter from December 20th, 1918. Talk about going deep into the dark hives. For Theater of the Mind, it's a real life experience of a woman who took time to write to William Fold's company and tell them what had happened to her. And it's a bizarre and entertaining story, to say the least, Bob. So thank you very much for doing that and being a part of the show this evening.
My pleasure. Always happy to help you guys.
I didn't even realize they kept letters from people that have had experiences, good, bad, or different. I would have thought they would have tried to destroy some of those letters where people were taking them to task for creating this portal to hell, Bob, but they kept these letters.
Well, you know, for the family, the Fold family, who made the Ouija board all those years, you know, William Fold was part of the original company in 1890. His children sold the company to Parker Brothers in 1966. To them, you know, this was just making a board game. This was just the thing that made them a lot of money. And these letters, they knew, were entertaining. And they actually kept this huge, really, really big, tall, thick album where they would put in photographs, letters, anything over the years. And when Hubert Fold died, which is William Fold's son, they actually gave me a lot of this stuff. So I have quite a few boxes of these letters from customers. And some of them are, you know, as simple and innocuous as just I lost the little pin from the window in my planchette to something bad's happened and it's your fault and I want money.
Right.
It's usually kind of how it ends.
Wow. So people, you know, we've been under kind of the misnomer that really Ouija board only took a darker turn during The Exorcist in the 70s, that was kind of when it really launched into it being a creepy and frightening experience. But you're trying to tell me that going back into the 1890s, that there was already an uprising of people fearful that they were dealing with the devil.
Yeah, there were always, you know, there was always a segment of the population who didn't like this. It came out of the spiritualist movement, and the spiritualist movement turns its back on the Ouija board real quick because people start buying Ouija boards, stop going to mediums. So the mediums attack the Ouija board, and some of the things they say carry on to today. People who are religious, you know, if you have to remember why you go to the Ouija board in the first place, and you turn to the Ouija board if you just want to have fun and find out, does Bobby like me? Or you turn to it to ask questions that nothing else can answer. That has a problem. The church has a real problem with that, right? Because they want you to pray and, talk to God about these things. When things go through fads, like the Ouija board often does, you know, it starts selling a lot. There are times when people guess that there are more Ouija boards sold than Bibles in the United States, and that's kind of threatening. So religious people don't like it because they see people doing something and asking questions of the dead that you're not supposed to talk to the dead. You know, stay away from that. Just talk to God. And so religious people always had a problem with it. It's just that the overwhelming population saw it more as an amusement, and you know, something they would do at night, and it would be kind of fun, and maybe they would believe and reach out. But it wasn't until kind of The Exorcist where you see it take a more demonic turn. You know, there were people who claimed they were talking to the devil, but that was kind of a small segment. It does change later on, and that's, you know, a big help with Hollywood. And, you know, you mentioned the movies Ouija and Ouija Origin of Evil. For listeners who are out there who don't want any spoiler alerts, the watch an Origin of Evil after the credits roll, because the piece that hooks the two movies together happens after the credits. Blumhouse kind of snuck it in there. So mm-hmm. You'll see exactly where the movie kind of begins for the first movie. It's kind of the end of the second movie.
Very cool. Terror Tales of the Ouija. We've got stories that are going to date back. How far back into your history did you dip for us this evening to tell us some of the creepier stories?
Well, you know, it starts off real early. So Ouija kind of gets its name and is born in 1890. And in 1891, we have this newspaper article for a Miss Eugene Carpenter, who basically loses her mind because of the things the Ouija board tells her. She has a husband who left her, and she has a boyfriend. And the Ouija board tells her that neither one are coming back. They both don't love her anymore, and that she's going to be all alone for the rest of her life. Oh. And these messages go on and on and on. And eventually she's found kind of in a nightgown walking down the street, just repeating, "We just said, so I know it's true."
Wow. That's not creepy. We just said, I know it's true.
Yeah. And you have to remember, you know, again, if you keep coming back to, you go to the Ouija board to answer questions that nothing else can. So when you're desperate and you ask the Ouija board something, any answer is better than not knowing, right? The scariest thing to people is not knowing. You know, like people will say it all the time when something horrible happens, you know, and someone's missing. I just want to know. And that's really where the Ouija board plays in, is because if you have something you don't know and you can't find out easily, and the Ouija board tells you something, you're already in a state where you want to believe what it's saying. So forget about what you think is making the board work, whether you believe you're talking to a spirit or your own subconscious or whatever. You know, again, what gets scary is you want to believe. And so this woman, Miss Eugene Carpenter, she wanted to believe any answer, because any answer, even the worst answer she got, was better than not knowing.
Boy, that'll really kind of key you into the idea of just how psychologically fragile we are, right? That's right. A lot of times doing the shows where we do psychic readings, it breaks my heart to hear people that know, they should know the answer for the question they're asking. It should be an inherently common sense answer in a lot of sense. But they need to hear and get that reassurance from someone, especially from the other side. Because, boy, does it feel better if grandpa or mom or your brother or sister come forward and give you that answer to push you in that direction that you already knew you were leaning anyway, right? And it's just that extra little nudge. So I can see how it could become addictive. And I played with the Ouija as a kid, and played with it at parties, played with it my neighbor girl, and had a lot of fun, and, you know, freaked myself out on occasion with it. But I never had anything dark or malevolent happen. I still don't. And I've started collecting some interesting boards and, you know, just trying to get kind of the cool little smattering, nowhere near the amount that you've got. But it's fun to look at them because of what they are. They're, to me, a sense of art and part of our history. But then you forget how easily people can be swayed by these boards and what it is that they're communicating with. Do you find most people are driven mad by the idea of not knowing what they're dealing with, or is it believing that they do know what they're dealing with and that's what's got control of them?
I think that's the part that plays out more often. I mean, there's people like, you know, yourselves and other paranormal investigators who are really looking at the situation, kind of you're in it and you're seeing and feeling what's happening. But your brain is also, you've done it enough times where you're starting to look at the people like, are they doing it on purpose? Is it their subconscious? You know, you're open to and skeptical as to what's happening. But for the average user, the Ouija board is often their first purposeful experience in the paranormal. It's the first on purpose time that they try to reach out. You know, you're younger and you might hear something or see something or have an experience. You're in a graveyard and you heard a noise and you run home. But the Ouija board, you're specifically asking and reaching out. And so, again, mirroring all of these things together and trying to understand someone's psychology, where they're at emotionally, where they're at psychologically, you know, where they're at in their day. I mean, I've seen people play the Ouija board who are just like in the best moods ever. And, you know, they never have a bad experience when they're in a good mood. But if you set up a bad place or they've had a bad day, maybe, you know, they spilt their coffee in the morning and their day just got worse from there, they have a really bad experience because their minds are in that bad place. And is it that because they're in a bad mood, they're kind of putting off that energy and that's what's attracting it? Or is it just, you know, like attracts like, or is it just their brains, you know, fulfilling this, I'm in a bad mood, so you're going to get a bad message? I think people believe that. I mean, you've heard it and we've done it. You've seen, you know, so many people play the Ouija board when it moves, even if you're skeptical for that brief minute, you're a believer because you're like, are you moving this? Because I know I am not purposely moving this. I'm not doing this on purpose. And it is a really odd, scary thing. So it's easy to see how people who are already desperate for an answer would believe something the Ouija board said.
Right.
I don't believe what most people say. So I'm a pretty skeptical person. You know, like fake news. The Ouija board offers alternative facts. So I think that you people who are using it, and like this woman, she was in such a horrible place that, you know, to her, again, having an answer was better than not knowing that. And of course, the answer drove her mad, but that answer was her worst fear. And the Ouija board does something that no other spirit communication tool that I've ever seen or heard of does, and that it reflects and magnifies whatever feelings and whatever inside of you.
Right, so, your intent, you know, and the purpose for why you're doing what you do.
Exactly. And that's what's scary. So that if you've got this kind of like feeling, it becomes very intense. The Ouija board session becomes very intense and everything's dialed up. And if you're in that place where you want to believe or that you're impressionable, you're going to have a bad experience.
Have you ever witnessed one of these experiments where even you start to feel uneasy by what's going on there?
Yeah. A lot of times actually, because people so quickly drop their skeptical nature. You know, like I used to live in Boston and I, you know, used to ride the Red Line. I used to always tell people, I know what to be afraid of. I'm not afraid of dead people. I'm afraid of the Red Line. But I would be on the Red Line and then we would talk. And, you know, if I was bringing a Ouija board home that got shipped to work or something, and I'd be like, all right, let's play right here, right in the commuter rail. And to watch how quickly someone who was looking around the whole time to make sure that they were safe and there wasn't a bad person on the train, how quickly they fell into the victim part of it, like whereas the board was telling them things and they quickly just dissolved. You know, they let down that guard so quickly. And so, you know, that's different because I've never seen someone kind of let their guard down with a K2 meter or an EVP recorder.
I'm so fascinated by the fear that is built into the Ouija board. You know, now there are tablecloths, there are keychains, earrings, and I'll watch people, I won't have that. I said, it's a key ring. I'm not going to have that in my house. It's evil. I guess it's a key ring. No, it's got the Ouija letters on it. And I'm like, so what? So does a dictionary has letters and it doesn't mean that it's evil. And just when people have it set in their mind that it is evil, man, even if it's just a representation of the Ouija board, people are absolutely freaked out by it.
Yeah, that's why I wear Ouija board t-shirts to keep people away. It doesn't work.
Let's go back into some more of the terror tales you've collected for us. We hit up 1891. Where's our next stop in the timeline of Ouija?
Sure. Well, another really great one and bizarre is out of Bridgeport, Connecticut, 1900. A spiritualist leader named Sarah Griffin. She's using the Ouija board and she believes she's talking to God. And God, through the Ouija board, commands her to kill herself. It's time to come home. And so she takes strychnine. She calls her husband and she tells him that the spirits have been calling her and calling her and calling her and telling her to do this. And that she's poisoned herself. She's going to die. And she will be seeing him soon because they're coming for him next. And then she dies.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, really bizarre. And yeah, again,
thanks, honey.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, oh, where's the insurance policy?
Quick. Yeah.
You know, like I, and again, so this woman's a spiritualist.
Yeesh.
She's a believer.
Uh-huh.
And this is her life. So when she's receiving messages, she's believing those messages. She has stopped using her kind of logical brain to say, okay, maybe I'm getting messages that are real sometimes, maybe sometimes not. Maybe I shouldn't be listening to these and doing them all the time. She went down the rabbit hole. And that's always a scary thing. I think you guys, I know, Dave, on the many ghost hunts I've been on with you, you're really careful to let people realize like, hey, you're getting scared. You need to stop, take a break. It's getting too intense. You know, for some people, you know, and similar to the new movie, where in the movie, the little girl just doesn't want to do anything but talk to her friends on the Ouija board. It's a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what's bizarre about it, again, is what I've never seen is the fear that you were talking about, that people just have assigned to the board. You've seen me set up tables of Ouija boards and watch the people who've paid money to have an experience with ghosts believe that if you'd use the Ouija board, you will definitely get an experience. And yet they'll, you know, their backs are against the wall as they walk by. They can't get far enough away.
But isn't it funny? On the other hand, then later on in the night when we do the deep, dark experiments, you've got these people that creep around the backside of the room to watch and there's no way they would touch it. And then they start to lean in and watch the experiments. And then before long, they've, you know, it's like they're looking at their first National Geographic, you know, Native American boobies or something. And, you know, they've got to try it. And they're looking around to make sure their friends don't know they're there. And, well, oh, great. Have you ever played with a Ouija? No. And if my mom knew I was down here, she'd be pissed, right? And mm-hmm. and it's just so fascinating to me. And then we've taken them in these experiments to show them that take back your power. You never have to be powerless. You never have to be fearful of what you're dealing with.
You know, you hit the nail on the head, Dave. That's the thing. With Ouija boards, we give the spirit communication device power. Mm-hmm. Now, what's a spirit communication device? Anything. Anything you use that you think helps you talk to the other side,
right,
part the veil, even talk to your subconscious, right? The Ouija board is just today cardboard and plastic. And we've talked about this. It's just there's nothing mystical about plastic unless it's made in China. Then we don't know what's in it. But besides that, there's nothing inherently to this. The power is in us. We're communicating. And
right.
That I think that's what's ultimately really scary. And that's what even some movies and different TV shows have kind of talked about. And why Ouija boards are scary, because the door you open up is inside of you. And that's maybe not easy to shut off. So even though, you know, the Ouija board has a baked in hang up switch, it's the goodbye right at the bottom, you know, oh, and we're done. Goodbye.
Right.
That should be enough. But because we don't want it to be us and we don't want to take responsibility or be responsible for something bad that we were talking to, you know, we say, oh, it's the board. Get the board out of the house. You have to burn the board. It's no one does this to these other. Again, has anyone ever like, you know, believe their K2 meter was haunted and then they felt the need to like smash the crap out of it?
I do know that. Yeah, there have been people that have shattered their electronic recorders or their K2 meter after feeling that they're being manipulated by the spirits that are trying to.
Okay, so
it does happen. Yeah,
it does. That's interesting because, you know, mostly, you know, people feel safer with electronic stuff, but for some reason, cardboard and plastic. Totally the devil.
Yeah. Let's take another walk through time and hear another one of your creepy stories.
Sure. You know, here's a really good one. And this is kind of like the mass terror kind of thing that happens.
Sure.
And in 1920 in El Cerrito, California, Jenny Morrow was hit by a car and it was a hit and run. This young girl was killed and her family just couldn't accept that their daughter was killed and that someone wouldn't own up to it. I mean, it's a small town. I mean, anyone can Google El Cerrito and they just can't believe it. How can this happen? And so they start having seances and they're using Ouija boards and they become 24-hour seances because the spirits tell them that if they break the circle and if they stop the seance, then they're never going to find out. And the Ouija board tells them about license plates and nothing it's saying ends up panning out. But of course, by the time we're getting to this, people haven't slept in a long time and they're mourning the death or not mourning the death of their daughter. And they start bringing in like the neighbors, and then like more people. And because they don't want the circle to be broken, they don't let the people out. It's like they're holding them hostage. And the police come in and take a bunch of people to psychiatric places to be evaluated. People are let out. The town goes on to unsuccessfully ban Ouija boards. It actually prompts the California legislature to try to ban all fortune-telling things. It doesn't happen. It doesn't work, of course. But the whole town went insane over this Ouija board use. And again, you're putting like a match with gasoline. You've got intense mourning, intense loss, really hard feelings, and people wanting to believe that they can make contact, that somehow they're going to find out if she's okay and who killed her. You know, who is this? That's the piece they needed.
Giving that peace of mind, giving people the feel that they can reach beyond the veil of death, that our loss maybe is not so deep, because all we need is this board. All we need is this planchette and our fingertips and our love and desire to connect us to the other side. That's why I think there's been such a powerful movement in the spiritualism realm since the 1800s, right? Is there's all this war, there's all this tragedy, there's all this uncertainty, and people are not getting answers from normal outlets. So it's time to seek. And maybe whether you're going deeper into your own id, ego, or you're speaking to the spiritual side, it's the opportunity to try to make a connection that we've lost in the past. It's so sad and weird, and you hear a lot of these cases. You know, I've been witness to people that have lost children and delve into the Ouija board or EVP and how it takes them over. And that to me is the scary side. You know, it's not, and it isn't the board. It isn't the tape recorder. It's their own personality. It's their own craving and want and desire and agenda that pushes them into bad places. It isn't the tools, right?
Right. You are giving it power. So if you believe that the Ouija board can't be stopped and, you know, that you can't hang up, you can't get rid of it, that's true. But everything is coming from inside of you. And, you know, the Ouija board or talking boards before them, they came about to give voice to the dead. So if the dead were supposed to be eternally silent, suddenly the Ouija board would give them voice and you could talk to them. So like you said, nothing changes. So, you know, we're reading these stories and it's like, oh, that's 1920 or that's 1891. That would never happen today. Look around. You know, you've seen them, you've posted them to me. You know, someone stabs their friend because the Ouija board told them to. Okay, I'm sure someone just got mad at their friend and wanted to stab them. And, you know.
Right. They want place the blame.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's all, you know, deflection and projection.
And there are murders that have occurred and they're documented newspapers, the Ouija murders, right? I mean, these cases where Ouija board, the spirits on the other side have convinced the person the only way to get what they need and their answers is to create or to commit murder.
Yep. The next one, if you want, we can lead right into the next one.
Please,
Here's a nice little Ouija murder. In 1923,
nice little Ouija murder.
Nice little Ouija
Bob,
murder.
You've got a weird sense of morality, but go ahead.
I know. I've been told. It's okay. In 1923, May Murdoch, she shot her husband 3 times because the Ouija board told her that her husband was untrue, that he was cheating on her. And when the police come because neighbors hear the shots, she doesn't remember pulling the trigger. The Ouija board told her that, you know, her husband was cheating on him. He was no good for her. She needed to get rid of him. And sure enough, you know, she picks up the gun and she blacks out. And when she wakes up and the police are kind of coming in, her husband's lying there and he died 3 days later. So people again want to believe. We all have feelings and thoughts that are like bad or dark, I should say. And, you know, your friends and your family and everyone kind of, they hold you up, right? Like when you start getting down, you got a whole network of people that help pick you up. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have that whole network and you're already feeling vulnerable and you start to believe your husband's cheating on you, and maybe 1923 for a woman, it wasn't like you could just say, you know, oh, hell no, get the hell out of here. You were very dependent upon him for your income, for everything. You're just sitting there thinking you're trapped, right? Like I'm stuck. And this guy's horrible, and the spirits, the all-knowing spirits, the all-powerful spirits are telling me this guy's no good and that I need to get rid of him. So I do it, because what else would you do? Now, again, that's a mind, you know, frame that you have to be in, but I understand, and I've seen how people who have kind of given up on their own, making their own choices, believing that, well, the Ouija board told me to, so that makes it okay. You know, again, just getting rid of responsibility. It's not my fault. And that's a scary thing, that right. People give up their own, you know, thoughts.
When you look at these cases as they come to you, and I mean, they're spread out through history, these weird, dark cases. Are there any that actually, by the time you get done reading them, have you unnerved?
They always have me. It unnerves the hell out of me that people stop using their brain. Like they stop using the logic. We all do it when we get afraid or when we want to believe. But Dave, you and I had this experience at Mansfield where we heard something walk right in front of us and shut doors, you know, and that blew my mind. But, you know, again, we were in this empty prison that there's all this stuff, you know, on the floor where we're at, noises can bounce around. So for 5 minutes, I was really, my mind was blown. But after 5 minutes, you know, my regular brain returned and it was like, well, it could have been all of these things, you know, I mean, but so those experiences are enough for me to keep coming back and wanting to experience more and wanting proof. But they're not enough for me to suspend my own sense of morality or emotional stability. Like, I would never kill someone because the Ouija board told me to kill them. I mean, I suppose if I did, I just was going to kill them anyway, or I was looking for an excuse. And so what scares me is when I read the stories that the people's lives were so sad that they didn't have anything else to make them feel better, that this – the Ouija board became their only friend, you know, the only thing they could believe in. Like, they had just kind of given up on people and, you know, whatever religious faith or whatever they had going on for them, they've let go and they're just looking to the Ouija board as if it's going to solve all their problems. And the reason, as we've been talking, is it often gets worse is because they're detaching from all the things in real life, you know, like the land of the living, this is where we exist.
Right.
So, like, you know, we want to investigate and we want to know because it's so, you know, it's so specific to us. What happens to our loved ones? What happens to me? But these people have lost that, and they would rather be with these things that are talking to them than they would the rest of the world. And that's the common thread in all of these murder cases. Like, they've just given up on other people.
Let's dip in. Give me a couple more quick scary stories, and then we're going to go to the Theater of the Mind segment, which I've been looking forward to. Tim says this one's something special, so we'll get to that. But yeah, give me a couple more of your favorite spooky stories from your collection.
Of course. Like, and here's a typical just bad person story. And I worked on this with Investigation Discovery. They did an episode on this called True Nightmares this past October. And what this is this happens – partly on an Indian reservation in Buffalo, New York. There's a model named Lila Jimerson, and she falls in love with Henri Marchand, who is an artist who works at the local college. And, you know, he's just like typical. He's sleeping with all of his models. They don't mean anything to him. He's married, by the way, and has children. But she thinks there is more. And so as he kind of casts her off, she becomes desperate. And so she turns to the former Indian chief's wife, this woman, Nancy Bowen. Her whole life has fallen apart. Her husband has died. The business is gone. She becomes very poor, and she doesn't speak English. She just speaks in her native tongue. And what Lila figures out is that if she can convince Nancy that Henri's wife is this evil witch who's causing all of the bad things in her life, she can get her to kill her for her, and then she can have Henri. And she actually does it. She convinces this woman, her best friend, that this man's wife is this horrible witch, this awful, terrible person who has actually caused her husband to die, and they plot the whole thing out. And so one night, They take the bus into Buffalo. They visit the house. Nancy goes to the house, and Lila goes to visit Henri at the college, so she has an alibi. And Nancy walks into the house and says to Mrs. Marchand, "Are you a witch?" And Mrs. Marchand kind of laughs. She thinks it's funny. Like, what do you mean? To which Nancy Bowen takes out a hammer and just bashes her head in and like just literally cracks her skull open and leaves her. Sadly, the person to discover their mother is the son, and he finds her, and then, you know, they piece together the pieces that it's an Indian woman because some of the neighbors had seen her, and of course the whole thing comes apart. She kind of tells her story, but they used the Ouija board, and so through the Ouija board is what was giving the messages that she needed to kill her. So like Lila would sit there with Nancy and say, "Well, how do we fix this?" And the Ouija board would spell out, "You have to kill her." And now, because Nancy couldn't read, she didn't know what the hell these letters were spelling out. They could have been spelling out nothing. But Lila was translating for her. Oh. So she convinces her to kill for her. And it's like a bizarre, bizarre story. Nancy ends up, you know, getting some short prison time because she clearly didn't know what was going on. But Lila ends up – they have to do the trial twice because they end up with a mistrial. And Lila ends up dying from tuberculosis anyway.
Unreal. What a frightening aspect. So strange. So strange.
Yeah. I mean, here's another one. This is the one I think that scares most people who have children. So, Dave, I know you have kids.
Oh, great. sleep with 19... one eye open. All right.
Exactly. So, 1933, we have Maddie Turley shoots her father. And this is the, kill my daddy, said the Ouija board. So I did. And what happened in this story is the mother doesn't want to be with the her husband anymore. She's decided she's had enough. He's a naval officer. He's never home. She's having an affair with a cowboy. And, well, she doesn't want to get divorced because then she'll lose half her money. Mm-hmm. So what do? You got to get rid of the husband. But I don't want to do it myself. So she uses the Ouija board. The Ouija board, the spirits tell the daughter. The mother is doing this. I mean, imagine this. The mother is pushing the planchette, telling the daughter, pretending to be the spirits, that you need to kill your father so that I can be happy with the cowboy. So she takes a shotgun and she shoots her father. Her father actually lives for a little while and then dies in the hospital. And, you know, the daughter is taken into protective custody, taken away from the mother. The mother goes to jail. Then it's overturned because you can't really prove that she was doing that.
Right.
You know, that it was the spirits or it was her. The mother, fights, and well into after the daughter turns 18 to see her and reconnect with her. But I mean, again, bad people or bad Ouija boards? Ouija boards don't kill, people kill. And, they use the Ouija board as an excuse.
So you're denouncing the fact that evil spirits are not trying to push people to murder?
No, I'm not saying that. I just think that it's right. More when you look into the real stories that are here, this. There's two things that happen, especially with the Ouija board, right? There's the, superstitions, Ouijastitions, or urban legends that have grown up around it. And then there are these real cases. And as you investigate the real cases, more often than not, and I would say 99% of the time, you find that it's bad people. And maybe those bad people are more easily manipulated by something else. Maybe people who are at a weaker mental state are more easily manipulated than something else, whether it's your subconscious, whether it's an evil spirit, whether it's the demonic entity. I don't know. But, when a mother – I think it's pretty evil when a mom uses her daughter to get rid of her husband.
Yeah.
At least have the balls to do it yourself. Not that I'm saying you should do this, but I'm saying
your child is going to get off with a much less sentence than you will. So I'm sure that's where the whole thing stems from, and that you could say the child made a mistake and all of that. I understand, not that I'm making excuses, Bob, but I'm just saying I can understand why that type of decision was being made. Will you do me a favor, Bob? Come back. Let's talk again later on this year. Dig out some more of your favorite creepy stories, and we'll continue to talk about Ouija and the history and mystery surrounding this interesting oracle.
I would be happy to come back anytime.
All right, folks, it's time now. We're going way back, deep, deep, deep into the dark hives, back to December 20th, 1918, with a little help from our friend Christine Letterman. It's time now for Theater of the Mind.
Mrs. M.S. Bouton, 935 Bellevue Place, Kalamazoo, Michigan. December 20th, 1918. Dear Sirs, William Fould, Fould is indeed the right name for your company. And just as sure as there is a God of love, and there is, you will be fooled in the great beyond. You have sold your life, your soul, your all to the demon of your invention, the Ouija board. I could, and I'm so strongly tempted to do it, arrest and make you pay me for the things that the devil of your board has done. I am a peace-loving, respectable woman, but for the amusement of our young people, was tempted to invest in one of those boards. The company that used it always laughed and have a lot of fun out of it. I looked upon it as being treated unkindly, and the demon of your invention in that way got hold of me. Night and day, the voice of that devil talked to me. I nearly died. No one knew what was the matter, and I would not believe the awful things or do the wicked things I was told to do. And if did, would be rewarded beyond measure. I would not let go of my faith in a God of love, and got so desperate I burned the tables, for I was told to get two, one for downstairs and one for upstairs, that when I was called to do good, I could have a board. I burned both tables, and I was told to use my front finger on my right hand, and God would tell me what he wanted. I did. And my hand flew over that board like lightning, and it told me that he was the devil, and because I would not leave the worst in me, he had. God, he hated me and threatened my life. Then I was so angry, I thought I would die, and my hand wrote very slowly that this board belonged alone in the devil, but to save me from death and hell, he had with great difficulty threw the devil down lower in hell and got on that board. If then quickly told me all the sins of my life, they were few, thank God, and what to do to save my life, everything was so true. I hated to do one thing, which was to go to an adopted daughter and my husband and tell them that I hated them. I knew not why. I was so cold, and I felt death staring me in the face. I heard my adopted daughter coming from her home, and I was upstairs and thought they will find me dead. But a voice came, "Go tell them! Go tell them!" And I had at last went down those long stairs so cold, stiff, and weak I could hardly go. I found my husband and my daughter playing cards on the Ouija board. I went past them and lay down in the next room. I found I was going into unconsciousness. I, with the greatest effort, got up and walked behind my daughter's chair and told them I was going to die. I thought, and then I told them, "Please forgive me." I told my husband and daughter I hated them. I told all. They were frightened nearly to death and thought me insane, yet thought I was dying. I looked so terrible. After they begged me to believe they loved me and had nothing to forgive, I sank into her chair, for she had gone crying and screaming into the dining room. I could not walk or talk. I was that weak. When the board they had set up by the side of the chair fell on my limb, I kicked it across the room and screamed and begged of them to burn it. My husband took it to the basement and found it to be a hard job to even smash the devilish thing with an axe. But he did, and burned it. I knew I had another upstairs. They didn't. So as soon as I could, I went upstairs and threw it into the backyard. Came down and silently went for an axe. I went into the backyard under the rome of our free American sky. And with the strength of a man, I smashed the board. And I took it down into the basement, put into the furnace. The price of the two boards, the 3 weeks of being unable to do my work as an alteration woman at $12 per week, the fact that daily I grew worse, then nearly died, rests on you. A company called Fold. The price of two was in 3 weeks worth total $38.60. And remember this, if you never pay this bill, you will suffer the torments of the damned. And remember, I will, as sure as there is a God in heaven, work to ruin your work, or have faith enough to believe you will see the devilish work you are doing and stop it short. I am well known here. I am trusted as being one of the most honest persons, and the demons of hell could not tempt anyone to steal more than I was tempted. If I should stand on the witness stand and tell all that board told me and done for me, you would never do business again. I have not yet decided just what to do, but the first thing I have done is to write this to you, and you will suffer as no person or persons have ever suffered if something isn't done to stop this work. And I, at Christmas with no money, as I have thought to have for my loved ones' gifts, I send you my full address. I am in God's hands now, clothed, and in my right hand, and no fear of the devil remains. So you can know who I am and will follow your tracks unless you do right and make amends and own up to the work you're doing and print on the back of each board, not to sit serious, but to treat in fun. That is when I got the devil going. I thought no one should thread it with a scorn, and your board is the most devilish thing under these circumstances I have ever heard of. What are you going to do? Please tell me. Mrs. M.S. Booten.
All right, let me break it.
That guy's... Adam.
Wait. Hold on, what? If there's anyone here, you can speak to me now through this device.
Not Ted, man.
How many people are here with me right now? Where exactly are you?
All right, welcome back to Beyond the Darkness. We just had a chance to talk with Ouija board historian Bob Murch. And as you heard, there are some really fascinating stories, some very creepy stories. And thanks to him, probably one of the coolest of our Theater of the Mind episodes. That letter dating back to, what was it, 1918, Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's an actual letter that was written into the William Fold Company, a complaint and a personal experience of dealing with the Ouija board. And we wanted to take a deeper look into Ouija itself. And one of the guests I knew I wanted to have is our next guest, Dr. Michael Shermer. He is the publisher of Skeptic Magazine, a monthly columnist for Scientific American, and a presidential fellow at Chapman University. He's the author of The Moral Arc, the believing brain, why people believe weird things, why Darwin matters, and the science of good and evil. His two TED Talks, viewed over 7 million times, were voted in the top 100 of more than 2,000 TED Talks. He's here with us this evening. Dr. Shermer, thank you for joining us.
Oh, nice to be back.
The Ouija board. This is such a weird enigma. I mean, to those of us on the outside, I wanted to talk to you about the believing brain and why we do believe in strange things like this, and chat about the Ouija board on the whole. For people that use this tool and try to use it to communicate with the other side or aliens or whatever they believe they're talking with, can you explain to us how psychology works behind this? What is actually driving this board? How is it working so that we can understand that it's nothing to do with the paranormal?
Sure. The Ouija board is based on something called the ideomotor response. I-D-E-O motor. It has to do with when you think of something, your subconscious mind moves your arms, muscles, limbs, eyes, whatever, head. And just by thinking about something, you subconsciously kind of move in that direction. Let's say I'm on my bicycle and I want to kind of go left. I don't really have to consciously do much about it. Just kind of lean a little bit that way, or you ride on one of those little two-wheeled I forget what they're called. Those little motorized gizmos that all the Google people use.
What is that, Tim? The big stand-up thing you buzz around on, the two-wheeled.
I forget what it's called. Anyway. Yeah. But the idea is that just by thinking something.
Segway, that's it, yeah.
Segway, yeah, it's like a Segway. You know, the Segway is very intuitive. You just kind of think about leaning, slowing down, or going right or left, and it just goes. And what's happening there is your body is making these motions you're not even aware of. And that's what's happening with the Ouija board, is that you're moving the planchette. Either you or your partner or both of you are moving it subconsciously. You're not even aware of it. Much of what our brain does happens subconsciously. And that's a good thing, because most of what it does, we don't need to know. Just running your body, keeping your heart beating and breathing and digesting food and all that stuff. You don't need to know all that consciously. So much of what it does is happen subconsciously. So you think, you know, I think the answer is yes, and you're going to subconsciously push that planchette over to the yes or no or spelling out a name, that kind of thing. It's the same thing with water dowsing. You know, you kind of think, you just hold those bent coat hangers or water dowsing sticks, and, you know, you just think about it moving and it moves. And you don't have to do it consciously, have to subconsciously. So, and there's been tests done on the Ouija board that, you know, people that are blindfolded, where they can't see where it's moving, you know, it just comes out gibberish, or you flip it upside down when they're blindfolded and it comes out gibberish. So it's not an external force pushing the planchette, a ghost or soul or some other person on the other side. It's you. It's you moving it. And the spooky thing about it is that it doesn't seem like you're moving it. Even if you're consciously trying not to move the planchette, and you and your partner are both, you know, knee to knee, and did you move it? No, I didn't move it. Did you move it? No, I didn't move it. Well, whoa, it seems kind of freaky. And I first got into this when I was in high school, and I did it with my little sister, who was in grammar school at the time, and we freaked each other out. But we started asking, you know, I was asking, who's moving the planchette? And I actually spelled out this name, Tessa, T-E-S-S-A. I'll never forget it. It was like, oh, my gosh. Who is Tessa? You know, where did she live? You know, she lived centuries ago, and she died at a ripe, actually spelled out, a ripe old age, because I said, how did Tessa die? Ripe old age. Oh! Yeah, but of course, we were just making stuff up. You know, this is called fantasy, fiction. This is what people do. And, you know, and so you can just do a simple test like that with the blindfold kind of thing. So that's all it is. It's not a tool. It's just a game. But it's a very effective game because of human psychology.
There are people that have used the Ouija board, and, you know, ever since, and we've talked about it on the past with Bob Murch and other experts, you know, the Ouija board was a big part of our social commonplace. People used it at parties. People used it at, you know, all types of events. And they even wrote popular music about the Ouija board back in the day during the spiritualist movement. And it wasn't really until The Exorcist that it kind of really took on this dark undercurrent, and suddenly it became this wickedly evil tool of the devil. And people that even bought one and had it in their house would start having bizarre encounters and strangeness. Now, I'm with you on the fact that if you're using it intuitively, you may already know what answers you want or your which answers you expect, so you might be moving it. But why would people start to hallucinate dark or evil things occurring to them just for owning the board?
Well, it depends what you mean by that. I mean, things that happen related to the game or just in their life in general.
Right. A lot of people will start believing that there's something dark or evil attached to these boards, and they'll start seeing and you'd think that would be counterintuitive.
You gave the explanation. That is, in pop culture, after the Exorcist, that became all the rage, demon possession. And
Dr. Shermer, it seems counterintuitive to think that we would start to create negative machinations of this board, because nobody wants to bring darkness or evil into their world. So why do you think that the minute that they've got one in there, they start feeling like they're open to this?
It does prep your brain. It's called cognitive priming. You prime your brain, and things like The Exorcist, movies like The Exorcist and pop culture movements like demon possession do prime your brain to kind of look for those sorts of things to happen in your life. So maybe normal events get reinterpreted in a darker way. You know, maybe a sound in the middle of the night, or a light, or some incident that happens with somebody that's kind of a conflict that feels more negative. You interpret it in that new sort of hypothesis or theory about the world. And I do remember when I was a born-again Christian back in the 70s and played with the Ouija board, as I mentioned, my fellow Christian said, "Oh, no, it's very bad, very, very bad. It's a dark, dark thing. You know, there's Satan works through these kinds of things, and you should get rid of the game." That kind of freaked me out at the time because I was a believer. And I started thinking about negative things. And in the Christian worldview, it's very Manichaean, very black and white, good and evil. And everything happens for a reason, both good and bad. And so when bad things happen, anything from you didn't get the parking spot to you lost your job or you, whatever, it gets reinterpreted as something dark. And then you remember, oh, yeah, I got that Ouija board. And then you make a pattern out of that. And you create a model of the world that is like that. It's not that people want dark things to happen, just that things happen and they're not always positive, and you interpret it in that light.
I remember back in the late 80s, early 90s, I went on a tour in Chicago with famed ghost hunter Richard Crow, and he would tell us about these weird stories regarding the Ouija board, and he had some photographs that he showed to us at the time about this one person who was trying to break their bond with the Ouija board, and how this board really seemed that this person wouldn't go out. It was almost like that Twilight Zone episode with William Shatner sitting at the cafe, plugging pennies right into the fortune telling machine. And this person couldn't make the simplest decisions without it. And it threatened this person if he were to stop using this. And he said that he would watch physical welts appear in the shape of handprints on this guy's arm or across his face. And he said he would be sitting there watching this and photographing it, but he never once believed that it was spirit activity or the demonic that was causing this. He believed that it was part of this guy's mental makeup. Now, hearing that, and we've been to places where they've witnessed scratch marks appearing on the body, seeming to come from an external force. Is our mind that powerful, Dr. Shermer, that we can, if we believe hard enough, cause physical damage to ourselves without actual touch or striking or scratching?
Probably not scratching, no, but certainly other things that are more internal, psychological states, depression, headaches, pain, things like that. I suspect in that case, probably the scratches were self-inflicted and then presented that way. You have to remember that people do stuff like that all the time, especially kids, teenagers, people that want to mess with you. People just make stuff up, and it's just a fact of life. It's something I've learned the hard way over decades of investigating these things. You know, some stuff is interesting, psychological. Other stuff is just blatant fraud. People make stuff up. They lie. You know, so it's always hard to tell which is which. To me, the more interesting thing is the power of the mind to cause us to believe all these sorts of things that, like witchcraft. And just think, you know, 500 years ago, pretty much everybody believed that women cavorting with demons in the middle of the night was the cause of accidents and plagues and famines and disease, shipwrecks, cows dying, pregnancies, and so on. Almost everybody believed that, and today almost nobody believes that. So what happened is science, and we learned to become skeptical of these kinds of claims. So, you know, never doubt the power of people to go back to believing something like witches or demons. It was very common at the time.
Now, I know a lot of us, our indoctrination to the Ouija board, we were at parties. We were trying to scare each other, trying to get that girl to cuddle up a little closer, or get the guy to put his arm around you and protect you from whatever evil was there. Here's the one experience. And with you, I mean, yeah, I've been hosting a paranormal radio show for 12 years. I've been on TV shows doing this stuff. And I have a fascination with the supernatural and the paranormal, trying to understand it. But there are some things I've seen that, you know, Dr. Shermer, I can't understand in a scientific principle to it. You know, I mean, when I played the Ouija board at a friend's party, we played this thing and all the messages were coming up creepy and our girls were cuddling in a little closer. We all legitimately started freaking each other out to the point where we eventually stood up from the table. The planchette is sitting right in the middle of the board. We're all standing there gathered around chatting, talking about this, and the planchette skids across the board and hits the ground. Nobody's touching it. Nobody kicked the table or leaned it. We're all standing there. Now, I'm thinking, is this because you've got all this static focus, all this chaotic energy of teenagers in hormonal situations, and we've just kind of built up a magnetized planchette or something, and that was just like a little outburst? I was, you know, that made more sense to me than a demon.
I don't know. Hard to say, really. The thing is it's always good to remember that we can't explain everything, and that one of the fascinating things about anomalous psychology is that there are these things that happen for which we have no explanation. I've had things like this happen, and I've written about them in Scientific American. I get a lot of letters from people saying they've also had strange and unusual experiences. And I say just enjoy it. Just take it as you will. You don't have to explain everything. It's nice if we can. If we can explain why there are no witches, that's a good thing. But you know, weird things happen, and that's okay. We don't know everything. And there may be other things at work. Who knows? It may just be a mismemory, a misinterpretation. Who knows? But it's always okay to say, I don't know.
Now, you're obviously a skeptic. You question, and I don't think that's the enemy of our field. As a matter of fact, I believe more people should be skeptical and question their experiences and what has occurred. You're a critical thinker when it comes to this type of thing. Have you ever had an encounter in your life or during research where even you are left scratching your head at the end going, you know, I don't believe it's paranormal, but I don't know what the hell caused that?
Sure, yeah. I had a number of experiences when I became born again. I had this sort of weird thing happen where I heard all these coyotes howling as if it was Satan angry that I had accepted Jesus into my heart. This was when I was in high school. From sleep deprivation, I had some fantastic hallucinations. But the weirdest one more recently was when I got married several years ago. My wife's from Germany. She came here to be with me. You can believe that. I still can't believe it. And our friends and family were all back in Germany. We kind of got married at the last minute for various reasons, logistical reasons. But we were going to get married anyway, so we kind of rushed it through. So she was feeling kind of blue about not having her mom there or her grandfather who had passed over. And she was raised by a single mom and her grandfather. And she had this radio from her grandfather that her and her grandfather used to listen to. And it was dead. She shipped it along with her belongings to me, and I tried to get it working. I couldn't get it working. It was dead. Dead for decades. And you have to do batteries in it. I tried this and that. I just didn't get it to work. So we just threw it in a drawer in the bedroom. And then so at this moment when we have a quiet time before we have our little ceremony at my house, all of a sudden we hear music in the back bedroom. And it's like, well, that's sort of weird. So we sort of go back there. And it's like, where is this music coming from? I thought, I must have left my iPod. No, it wasn't the iPod. Well, maybe my laptop. No, not the laptop. Maybe the neighbors. No, not the neighbors. And it's like, well, wait a minute. It can't be what I think it is. And my wife pulls the door open, and there's her grandfather's radio playing, perfectly tuned in. It's this romantic song. I don't remember what the song was now. We were so freaked out about it. It was beautiful, romantic music. It played the rest of the day and the night, and then went dead the next day, and it's been dead ever since. And, you know, I have no idea, you know, what the explanation is. I mean, it's not like there was an earthquake and it shook the radio. I don't know. And so I heard about this in Scientific American, and I basically concluded I don't have an explanation. Maybe there is one. Who knows? But, you know, the emotional content for my wife, that her grandfather was there with us, even if you don't believe he was really there in spirit, but there in her mind or her memory or, you know, that kind of an event that has an emotional effect, that's okay. That's good enough to say, yeah, it's meaningful to me, and that's good enough. That's okay. And since then, I wrote about that in Scientific American, and I got hundreds of letters, mostly from people that had similar experiences, not radio, but just, you know, really weird, unusual things. And, you know, so my friend Deepak Chopra, he thinks that, you know, there is a spirit world, a consciousness, a cosmic consciousness that, in which we're all linked and connected, and, you know. And so he thinks it was something like that. Although even Deepak, who loves science, says, well, there was probably some little speck on the wires inside that connected it and turned it on. But the timing, you know, the timing, maybe it's the spirit moved a little speck on the wire, you know, whatever. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know. And that's okay.
Is that, as somebody who is a critical thinker, when you have a moment like that, you know, when you spend so much of your time looking at the true nature and science of how everything works, does that kind of shake your confidence at times and think, God, maybe there is something more to this? Or do you stay pretty steadfast and clear your mind again, going back to there's definitely a rational explanation?
Well, a little bit of both, I guess. Initially, I was, you know, a little taken aback, although my editor retitled the column, skepticism is shaken to the core, something like that. So a lot of people are like, oh my God, Sherman's gone over to the dark side. Like, and I'm telling you, calm down, everybody, calm down. You know, it's okay if we don't have an explanation for everything, and it's okay to write about it and talk about it, think about it. It's okay. Where I'm now, I guess, like what Deepak said, even if there's a perfectly natural explanation, that doesn't mean there isn't something else. Now, I'm not on board with his cosmic consciousness stuff exactly, but, you know, but it could be, you know, it could be that there's much we don't know about the universe, and, you know, there could be stuff like that that goes on. So I'm somewhat open-minded without, you know, committing to any particular position. I think it's okay to just say there's a lot we don't know about the universe. Let's keep an open mind. And, you know, science is only a few centuries old, and, you know, who knows what we're going to think and believe 500 years from now.
I always,
when we look back, like I mentioned witches, you know, everybody right. believed in witches. Now they don't. So I'd be curious to know what today we all believe and just accept. In 500 years, people are going to look back and go, can you believe the stuff that those people believed in the 21st century? I don't know.
I'm with you. And I always say, and Tim, one of my favorite memories of doing this TV series Paranormal Challenge was one of our final episodes when we were out at Linda Vista. Zach said, who should we bring in as our judges this week? And I said, oh, we should get Dr. Michael Shermer from Skeptic Magazine. And he looks at me and he goes, are you nuts? They're going to tear us apart. And I said, no, man, that's the whole idea. You are open to this, are you not? He said, yeah. And I said, and you want answers, whether it's fits our dynamic of being the paranormal or not. We want answers. And he goes, yeah, all right. If you think that's cool, let's ask Dr. Shermer. And I half expected him to say no. And then the other half of me thought he's going to think, oh, I'm getting on this show, I'm going to shred them. And you came on, and it was such a great opportunity to sit down next to you as we're watching this bank of monitors, and we're talking about what's going on, and we set up an experiment to kind of preload people with this ghost story for this one room and see if they would come back with evidence on a made up ghost story. And we were talking about this and having a good time. And for the life of me, two things happened on that episode that I'll never get over. One, something occurred and it was weird. And we all turned to you and I said, well, what do you make of that? And you just shook your head and you go, I have no idea what just happened, but that was weird. And I looked at the camera guys, and they're all giving me thumbs up, and they're like, cool, we just got Skeptic Magazine guy saying he has no idea what just happened, but it was weird. That was the other weird part of the episode. That's the one part they didn't include in the episode. And I was astounded. I'm like, this was an amazing opportunity.
I wonder why.
I don't either, but I thought it was so funny because I was so psyched to see that episode and watch Dr. Shermer actually admit, I don't know what the hell that was, but that was weird. And it didn't make the episode, but that was so fun being a part of that. And even watching you, and you said it, you turned to me and you said, Dave, it's not that I don't want to believe. I'd love for this to be real. I would love to see something for myself. I just haven't seen anything that's convincing enough yet. And then it was like 10 minutes later and that weird thing happened on the screen and I don't have any idea what the hell that was. That was weird. Right. And it was great timing of it.
You know, I mean, it's true. If you just spend the night, all night long filming, anywhere, I think weird things might happen.
Yeah.
It's just, what do you make out of it? You don't have to make anything out of it. You just say, weird things happen.
That's true.
Full stop.
Well, Dr. Shermer, I
agree with UFOs. I mean, UFOs, by definition, it's an unidentified. That's all it is. We don't know what it is.
I agree, and it's a pleasure. I know you're out on the road and in traffic, and our audio quality is not the greatest. I'd love to have you back in the future when we can explore different aspects of this and chat some more. So thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, thanks for having me. We'll do it again, for sure.
Always a pleasure. We'll have links up. You can find information. Skeptic.com is the website you want to go check out for Dr. Michael Shermer and Skeptic Magazine. Let's special thanks to Dr. Michael Shermer for joining us, Ouija board historian Bob Murch, and of course, voice actor and good friend of ours, Christine Letterman, for doing our Theater of the Mind this week. I think that goes down as one of my favorite ones, Tim.
Oh, yes.
A letter from 1918. How cool is that? An actual handwritten letter that we got to present on the show tonight for Theater of the Mind. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. That's it for this week, kids. Be nice to one another. Love one another. Be kind. We'll be back with you next week. We've got Parashare and Supernatural News on Monday. Daryl Sims joins us on Tuesday, the alien hunter. We're going to talk about alien abductions and alien implants and more. We've got Professor Lloyd Auerbach will be with us next week as well as we talk about ghosts, spirits, and poltergeist. What are the definitions and what exactly is it that we're dealing with when investigating the paranormal? This is a guy who's been doing it for a long time and has some very unique insights. Oh, yeah. And next week, Theater of the Mind is going to be kind of extended, Tim. Our buddy Dark Waters is joining us for the first time on Beyond the Darkness.
Very cool.
We're going to hear some of his creepiest stories, and he's got some brand new audio stories from his Dark H2O YouTube page. So you'll be make sure you check that in for next week. A lot of cool stuff happening. We'll be back again with you. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.